podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast episode 101 with me, Rob Cope, and Dan Farrant. How are you doing, Dan?
Doing very well. How about you, mate?
Good. You know, I think this is the first time we've ever done a show on a Sunday.
Is that right? Yeah, it probably is, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
How come we're doing it on a Sunday?
It's just really hard to keep up with our own, like, dreams of making shows. Like, I don't know, to be honest, because this is the Manchester Jazz Festival preview show, if we don't put it out now, it won't make any sense, because it'll be like a posthumous preview show. Festival starts in a couple of days. So yeah, if it weren't for that, I guess we'd just chill out and do this next week, let it be on Friday, and then it would make no sense. So that must be why.
Yeah. Are you going up for the festival? Or?
I am, because my band is playing.
There it is. I just thought I'd throw that question in there.
Blammo. Friday the 24th at... Yeah. We're between 4:30 and 6:30 in the Royal Exchange Studio. Huge. It'll be the first gig.
Finish the podcast there, can't we? Now that everyone knows.
Yeah, of course. There'll be a plethora of podcast fans.
Yeah.
Also, it's the first gig we'll have had where I can sell CDs. And I bought a card reader, so you don't have to bring cash. How about that?
Very good.
Yeah, man. I'm excited. Yeah, my wife Claire's playing in that, like, I don't know if it's called the opening ceremony, but...
Oh, fancy.
Yeah, that'll be a laugh. I'm actually going to... I signed up to do a parade through the streets of Manchester with my saxophone, so...
You're kidding, or you're being serious, aren't you?
I'm deadly serious.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, I love to make jokes, but not about this.
So what is that then?
It's to start the festival. There's like a parade and you improvise and you walk and laugh and cry. And then when you get to the St. Anne's Square, there's this moment, I think, where you all like hold the same note in unison and the sound is like passed to the stage. So exactly. That is great. If you want to come play some tunes and have some fun, that's Thursday afternoon. Totally free.
Great.
Yeah, classic. So this show is half Kyron Matthews, half Jazz Festival Preview, because Kyron's so, like, intertwined with the festival. He runs his night NQ Jazz. I think they're every Monday, but they've just announced that they've now got Arts Council funding. So there's loads of gigs listed, which is really cool. And they're in the Jazz Festival with their night as well.
Yeah.
But of course, the night is nothing without Kyron. So the show, it's a mix.
Are you going?
To do...
Kyron's...
Oh, he's like hosting all these nights.
Oh, he's hosting,
you know?
It. Sorry, okay.
He could probably give himself a gig every night if he fancied.
That's what you'd be doing.
Yeah, that is, Dan, funnily enough. That's why no one allows me to run a venue.
So, Rob, I did I played double bass on a gig yesterday.
Wow! How was it?
It was fun. Yeah, it was. I was booked as the magician, but he'd found out that I used to play double bass, and they were like a music instrument insurance company. And so he was like, do you want to play? And he managed to convince me to say yes.
Oh, mate, that's so cool.
I did a solo double bass, jazz double bass gig.
That's so good. How long did you play for?
I did about 15 minutes solo, and then there was a harpist, and so we played some like Debussy stuff, and then did the Miles Davis thing. It was weird. It was really random.
Sounds great.
But yeah, not very long. Did like an hour, and then magic. So yeah.
Any back pain, or does it feel all right if it's
no?
Like an
it was painful at the end.
Right, so,
but it was worth it.
Nice, man. That's brilliant to hear.
Like my first one in about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. I think if you can call it a gig, that time we reviewed a plastic saxophone was probably the last time for both of us.
Yeah.
Can't remember which episode that's in now. So this show is recorded at Foundation Coffee House in Manchester.
Oh, I've been there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, what are the chances?
There you go.
What took you there?
I did a trade show, and that was the coffee shop I went to in the mornings a few years ago.
Yeah, lovely little place. I also got this is the first parking ticket I ever got in my life.
You've contested it though, haven't you? You showed me the evidence.
I showed you the evidence of a blank sign which I parked outside of, and I sent it to them. And on the Citizens Advice Bureau, it says if the sign's blank, that's grounds for a dismissal of your fine.
Right.
And they just emailed me back saying, "Yeah, we've decided not to, not to withdraw our complaint." Yeah, so now I can either go to court.
Oh, do it, mate.
Court for it's a £25 fine.
Mate, do it.
I reckon so. I'm bound to win.
Yep, easily.
It's outrageous.
Just tweet them publicly. Publicly show that, and then be like, what's going on?
And in their submitted evidence of why I got the ticket is the same picture I took of a blank sign.
Right.
This is whatever the word is for when something's not
unjust.
Yeah, it's unjust.
Injustice here is great.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to start a public campaign against Manchester Council.
Mm. Well, that's like, have you seen, what's his name? The comedian who does the parking ticket thing.
I don't know.
From Birmingham. Joe Lycett, parking ticket.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's verging on this territory. So he gets a ticket for parking in a taxi rank.
Right.
And then he was like, can I see the evidence for it? And then they sent him a picture of his car. And like someone had just written taxi rank on his car. And so he was like, he replies saying, oh, well, I don't think this is correct. And because I wasn't in Manchester in a taxi rank, I was actually parked on the moon. And then just in paint, he's written the moon on his car. And it's very funny.
I'm gonna go watch that.
Check it out. But yeah, don't be paying that.
No, it's outrageous.
Do it on Twitter. Just post it on Twitter.
Yeah, you're right.
And then so everyone can see it. And then
I might use the official Jazz Podcast Twitter account.
Do it. That's why we have Twitter.
Exactly. So if you don't already follow us on Twitter,
everyone can retweet it and like it.
Exactly. This is a good time to get involved.
We need a hashtag. What's the hashtag? Rob's Injustice.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hashtag the Jazz Podcast comes crashing down.
Mate, I did that a long time ago.
Yeah, too late. That's out there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's play Kyron's show.
Right.
Kyron Matthews, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Yes, we're in, what's this called?
Foundation Coffee House.
Foundation Coffee House. Can we call this the Northern Quarter?
Yeah, it's not, absolutely.
Oh, we can.
Great. It is the heart of the Northern Quarter.
Oh, wonderful. I haven't lost my touch then. So we're going to do a kind of a mixed show of simultaneously trying to preview the Manchester Jazz Festival whilst previewing your life at the same time.
Previewing my life?
Or reviewing it. Depends, I don't mind which way you want to go.
Yeah, that's a bit of a meta start to things.
All right, let's dive in. So tell us who you are.
Who am I?
Who are you?
Well, I'm Kyron Matthews. I'm a saxophonist based in Manchester, soon to be spending a couple of years in London. And I promote with my partner Emily at a night in Manchester called NQ Jazz, and we get bands from all over the world. It's fantastic, it's great. I run a few projects around Manchester, lead a freelance career, do some international bits and bobs of work within the Faroe Islands at the minute, which is great fun, and yeah.
Sick.
Live the dream, in theory.
All right, perfect. So your venue is a big part of the Manchester Jazz Festival.
Yeah, for the first time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And did really that come good. About because they're moving venue? I mean, well, not just because of that. Obviously,
that's
you guys are super established now as well.
Yeah. So it came about, when I first started the night up, it was about...
Why did you want to start a night even?
So, yeah, let's go from the beginning.
Yeah.
Basically, Manchester has loads of great musicians in it, as you know. and you know, yes, there's always been a good scene,
yeah,
but not too many places for people to actually go and play and put, yeah, on, especially original music.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of frustration in the air, I felt, a few years ago, of lots of projects, nowhere to play.
Yeah.
Which I know happens all over the world all the time.
Yeah.
But I thought, okay, let's do something about it. So we set up a night at a place called The Wonder Inn, which was amazingly fun, run by Kirsty Almeida, who did amazing stuff there. It was a bit of... it was a mad conglomeration of things.
Yeah.
They did sort of spiritual healing and vegan food and held comedy nights and cookery nights and jazz gigs on a Monday night.
Right.
So we thought this would be cool. Let's go and make some music happen. And as with all these things, started out running it. I had no idea what I was doing. I'm fairly inept at life in many ways. So trying to promote a jazz night and get lots of people down was slow traction.
Right.
So, you know, there was a few gigs of two men and a dog.
Yeah.
But it was great. Built
over
time.
I played a few of those.
Yeah, yeah. Were you the dog or the...
Yeah. Not even playing. I've been cast as a dog in the audience.
And
career's going great.
And, But it built up really well, and then, you know, after a short while, the gigs were really thriving, lots of great stuff happening. Steve Mead popped down to a few of those gigs and was really enjoying it, and I think there was some slow...
Steve Mead runs the Manchester Jazz Festival.
Should definitely,
so he's,
clear on,
like,
these things.
Coming down and seeing... Wait, and this is still the old night?
Yeah, this was at the Whiskey.
Right, okay.
The Wonder Inn.
The Wonder Inn, yeah.
So this was maybe 3 years ago, even,
cool,
that he popped down to a couple of gigs.
Yeah.
And I think there was some slow traction building there towards maybe having... The Wonder Inn as part of the Manchester Jazz Festival.
Yeah.
But then there was a lot of... It was a reclaimed warehouse space, so there's a lot of health and safety issues,
right,
and things,
okay,
like that might not have met MJF criteria at the time. So, and then unfortunately the Wonder Inn shut down, as with loads of these great sort of cooperatively led projects.
Yeah.
The landlord decided, you know, apartments or offices are far more suitable, so...
Yeah, profitable.
Profitable, So kicked out all the arty types, and then we had a brief home somewhere else that didn't really work out, and then we arrived at the Whiskey Jar just over a year ago, and that's been amazing.
How did you find the Whiskey Jar? Well.
Fantastic. The staff are great.
Like, how did you find it? what is it?
So,
like a bar?
Yeah, but they've been putting live music on for years. They already have a good live music reputation, but not necessarily in the jazz world.
Right. Whereabouts is it?
It's about a 30-second walk from here.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And so it's very close to Piccadilly Station. It's the Piccadilly end of the Northern Quarter. And it's an old warehouse space. And there's a downstairs basement venue.
Yeah.
Completely cut off from everything else. Upstairs is a really nice bar. Lovely whiskies, obviously.
Right.
Which is always a positive for any venue. But downstairs is a custom-prepared... music space.
Oh wow!
So there's really great acoustic in there for live acoustic music as well. We even had Will Sash's band on, and he played Amplus and was perfectly, beautifully audible because it's loads of exposed brick and tile.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful acoustic to play in.
Right. What is that? He plays bass. I'm gonna.
Yeah.
I was thinking like an electric guitar. That's not gonna sound great. You know.
Yeah, that would be a pretty special acoustic.
Self amplification.
But yeah. So you know, it's great for what we're trying to put on.
So how often are you running jazz nights there?
Well, I should say for a start. As well, sort of around the time of transitioning to the Whiskey Jar, a lot of the running of the night was taken over by Emily, my partner.
Right.
You've met before.
Emily Burkhart.
Yeah. And she's, who for some reason has all of your old Chet's belongings.
Oh yeah, I remember you telling me that once. She's like my guardian.
Yeah.
I like
keeper
knowing
of the flame.
That, it just makes me feel safe, exactly. I think everyone should do that, so that if anything happens to me, my stuff is safe.
It is.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
it's in good hands.
Yeah, I'm really happy. My mum will be delighted, actually, as well.
All those years of investments.
Yeah.
That you just cast aside.
Yeah. See you later, books. Won't be needing you where I'm going.
So yeah, so she took over a lot of the running of the night, and these days does all the programming as well.
Right.
Great. She, if she's really torn between booking several things, then we sit and have a chat about it.
Okay.
But I'm in the nice position now of mostly just rocking up on Mondays and getting to enjoy really good music that I haven't had to stress about too much, which is great.
So but she's booking everything
these days.
All right, and what do you, are you just, I mean, it must be more than just showing up.
It is, yeah. We share a lot of the promo work and right. the behind the scenes and the horrible endless hours of emails and phone calls and all the rest of it.
How many, when, how often is it, did you say?
Every Monday.
Right, oh yeah.
With occasional extras.
No, so like the jazz festivals.
So that's obviously a big extra. We also had Beats and Pieces do a Thursday night gig a little while ago.
Yeah.
We've potentially, it's in the nitty gritty of being pinned down, but Jonathan Kreisberg's quartet on a Friday night later in the year.
Yeah.
So a few odds and ends.
Brilliant.
Like that. And yeah, so some weeks there's not too much to worry about, but other weeks it's a horrible deluge of too much stuff for me to handle.
And you're moving to London, or I say moving, you're like slicing yourself to get to London to study jazz master's degree at the Royal Academy.
Yeah, which is going to be great for
Which is sick, yeah. But how does the night run in that instance?
Sure, so the idea at the moment, and obviously all bets may well be off when the fight comes about, but the idea is that most of the weekly running will still go as it is because Emily does the majority of pinning stuff down.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll come back up for most of the Monday nights.
Right.
And as it stands at the moment, obviously I've got loads of gigs booked in the diary.
Yeah.
A lot of which are up around the north anyway over weekends. Yeah. So it depends. If I'm specifically needed down at the academy on a Monday, obviously I'll be down there.
Yeah.
Possibly pop back up for the evening if it can work and trains don't utterly rinse my bank account.
Yeah.
But fingers crossed it should work that most weekends I might be able to stay up Saturday through Monday and back down Tuesday morning.
Yeah. Do you have any idea about the schedule yet?
No, I need to have a good chat to Nick.
Okay, cool.
Pin it all down.
But it was a long time ago I was there. That everything was on Monday morning.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm sorry. I just thought I'd throw that out now.
I'm pretty sure I did float it to Nick the audition, and he said that there wasn't much on a Monday anymore. There was one class.
Oh, great.
And it's not every week. So I think there's hopefully a good bit of flexibility with it.
Yeah, I'm sure that, I'm sure there is, because your being busy is a good thing.
As long as I still have
against you.
Yeah. As long as I've got plenty of practice hours, then
I'll
make the rest work.
Yeah.
But so on the Monday nights, obviously there's all the setup and all that, and I tend to host the nights as well.
Yeah, great.
I'm quite a loud, shouty person.
Excellent.
So I can do my best to try and rouse people a little bit.
So let's talk a bit about the jazz festival.
Mm.
What are the gigs that you've got showing as part of Manchester? Because when is the festival starts on the
20th? Week and a half, even.
I'd have my diary out. So it's like the 23rd, Thursday the 23rd to Thursday Monday the 27th, is that right?
Correct, although we have very slyly slipped in an extra gig on the 22nd.
Great.
As our very own pre-festival warm-up.
That reminds me of the Olympics, when the events start before the opening ceremony.
Oh, nice.
Like, wait a minute, let's do it.
And we're kicking off with a proper bang as well. We've got Ivo Neame's quartet.
Oh, brilliant.
With George Crowley, Tom Farmer and James Madryn.
Oh,
so that's going to be a phenomenal start to things.
Yes.
Really excited about that.
That'll be awesome.
But obviously we're promoting that off our own back, so it's
Not in the festival version.
Exactly, We had hoped originally it was going to work out date-wise, but I think Ivor had some gigs in Belgium over the weekend and something elsewhere, so it wasn't going to work out quite as we planned. But we thought it would be really sad to, having got in touch and got it all rolling, to not have the gig anyway. So we're just taking it upon ourselves.
Seems like a great idea.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Fantastic. Then we've got Julian Siegel.
Yeah.
On following night with Liam Noble.
Thursday afternoon. Sorry to interrupt you.
No.
I'm going to pretend like this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Thursday afternoon is Andy Scott's Mancunity.
The commission.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. They commission a work every year, don't they?
Yeah.
Last year was Esther Swift, harpist.
And the year before was Andy Stamatakis Brown.
Wow.
His Cotonopolis project.
Of course.
That was a lot of fun.
Great knowledge. You played on that.
I played on
that. Sick.
Yeah. It's only knowledge because I was present.
Yeah, good work.
Yeah.
So Andy's band, which like has like parades of musicians of any age and ability, can like all walk through the city, and then you like meet up in St. Anne's Square, where I think you probably all play like one long loud note or something. Yeah. I don't know. And then Andy plays one long loud note, and then it all becomes his piece.
Yeah.
I like the concept though of like literally everyone who wants to play can go and play.
Yeah.
You know? And then you've got Julian Siegel that night.
Pretty much straight after. It's an early evening gig, 6:30. And I think Mancunity finishes at 6. So hopefully the throng, the crowds will throng through the streets of Manchester, yes, congregate around Andy, and then like the Pied Piper, hopefully he will lead them all straight to the whiskey jar. That would be the
thousands
dream
of people, exactly, down, yeah, in a giant jazz parade.
In the tiny 100-seater basement.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Sardine.
Great. How many do you think you could fit in if you crammed as many people as possible?
The whiskey jar's official figure is 180.
Yeah.
I already think that's insane.
Right, that's brilliant. I love that you think that's insane.
Yeah. We can fit in 100 seated, and there's room to exhale, and that's about
right.
It.
Right.
It's, yeah.
Okay, great. I don't remember what the figure was. When we were at the Northern together, the student union had a fire safety limit. It was about 180 people, you know, and you'd fit like 500 in there comfortably.
I'd say it's about four times the size of the whiskey jar, basically.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a great area for flying remote control helicopters, which is is what I spent my final year doing.
Yeah. I think that JCR just completely got used for playing pool and table tennis.
Table tennis, it was great as well for that big time.
Yeah.
There was a Wii in there for a while, Nintendo Wii, what? You know. Yeah. That was good.
I missed out on those days.
That's how I met Jack Davies.
It's all practice pods now. Tiny little.
What, in the JCR? Prison.
It's gone. It's prison cells of.
Gone.
You know, sort of 2 foot square practice space.
Wow. Wait, so they just papered over it and like put all these pods in it.
I'd love that. I'd love if they built it within the framework of the JCR.
Yeah.
Left it all as it was. And you could strip it away. No, I think I'd be just stripped it all out. And...
So where'd you go to drink? You stay in the canteen downstairs.
Yeah, it doesn't seem as friendly and sociable.
No, it's very interesting. But I guess there's never enough practice rooms anywhere.
Exactly.
Cool.
But yeah, so Julian Siegel.
That would have changed
Tuesday.
My whole life.
Yeah.
If there were practice pods at the RNCM when I was there, instead of a remote control helicopter like training zone, I think I'd have just lost my mind.
You wouldn't have needed
mind.
Your masters.
I couldn't have practiced.
Oh, right.
No, I still need it. I need even more. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, sorry. Julian, so what's Julian's gig?
So that's his quartet as well, with
right.
Liam Noble and Gene Colarazzo and Ali Hayhurst.
Yeah.
It's going to be burning.
Yeah.
Full throttle stuff.
Yeah.
And then we've got three gigs the next 3 days. Friday,
well, this
Saturday,
is
going to
be exhausting for you.
Oh, no.
A gig a night for the entire festival.
Well, the next are all afternoon gigs.
Right, okay.
I don't know if that's better or worse for the...
I quite like the sound
the
of
the tiredness. So, on the Friday... On these three, I think Emily's tried to, like... bill it as an emerging artist stage, but I think some of them have very much already emerged.
Right, I see. Know? Yeah.
But as in, they're not, you know, Julian Siegel or
I love the idea of Julian Siegel on the emerging artists.
I know, that'd be great. Yeah. But, you know, so younger bands in as an average.
Yeah.
So we've got Tom Ridout's quintet.
Awesome.
Which is quite, I suppose, quite a new emerging name.
Yeah.
But he's phenomenal, not just
he's
as a sax player, but you know he's a virtuoso recorder player.
Wow.
He's a serious jazz recorder player.
That's amazing.
And it sounds outrageous.
I'd love to know about that.
Yeah, so we're hoping for some of that on the gig. That'll be amazing. And that's a killer band as well. That's Will Barry, Billy Marrows, Flo Moore and Rod Orton. So that'll be cool.
Yep.
And then Friday afternoon there's some other gigs knocking about at the festival.
Yep.
Gods of Apollo.
Oh my god, my band! I had literally
what a
completely
seamless...
forgotten them. Wow, this is amazing. This is the first, this is what I can't, I,
people come on your podcast and I'll plug your gigs.
This is, my mind Brilliant. Is completely blown. I honestly did not see that coming. As you were setting up, I was like, where's the, I wonder where this is going. Who's playing on Friday? Yes, that's true. My band, Gods of Apollo, is playing.
Yeah.
Which will be really fun. Yeah, it'll be our first gig since I got the 500 albums that are now under my sofa.
So, 499 now.
499.
Proud owner.
You very kindly missed the crowdfund and then backed me £10. So I thought, I loved the imagination. I loved the determination. I appreciated it so much. So
it was one of those things. I had the crowdfunder page open on my desktop for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And just kept running around in circles, and then finally sat down about 3 hours after the deadline had passed and kicked myself.
I've just bought a card reader so that I can sell CDs without asking, like, writing in the brochure that everyone has to bring cash to the gig if they might want one. I don't think I'd ever sell one otherwise, so it'll be a fun business venture.
Yeah, that'll be a mega gig. Tom Ridout's gig, I think, finishes something like half an hour before yours starts.
There's a lot of, like, one gig running, like, sort of just close to the next one, So, but I love that, because you're kind of guaranteed an audience
when
there's not loads of gigs on all at the same time.
Mm. Well, I'm hoping that at the end of Tom Ridout's gig, myself and Emily can sort of elbow our way out the front and then bomb it across.
Yeah.
So that'll be good fun.
This is a great place for a jazz festival, because everything's just about walking distance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know? It's all very compact.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you were asking earlier on about the change of venue for the festival.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because not only is it a change of venue, but it's a change of time of year as well.
Yeah.
But that's because the town hall is undergoing a massive refurb.
Yeah.
And
the space that used to be the Spiegel tent used to be outside the town hall square.
And it's now a construction site. So not very.
It's like helpful. A 6-year project, isn't it? It's a long time.
So Steve was reaching out into new places and seeing what we can make work. So it's a great opportunity for us to jump on board as well.
Yeah, it's great timing actually for you, I guess.
Yeah, and they've reached out to a few different new venues as well.
Yeah.
So Yes is a new venue in Manchester that's only popped up within the last year or two.
Right.
And that is, it's the old auction house, I think. You know where the old BBC building was?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Didn't that become a car park? Did they knock it down?
Yeah, the BBC building is, I think, becoming a shopping centre.
Oh, wow.
It was
just
a dirt.
But they didn't knock it down? Oh, what? They're building a new shopping centre on the car park. Okay, I'm with you now. Yeah, a car park's such an uninspired thing to do with a space in a city.
Definitely. Especially on a cultural ground as well.
Yeah, totally.
So, although a shopping centre is not necessarily
good point,
a massive lump of commercial capitalism.
Yeah, we need more H&Ms in the world.
Yeah, brilliant. So, and then onwards, Saturday, we've got Flying Machines.
Yes,
it's gonna be
Alex
mega.
Monk.
Yeah, lovely, beautiful. Lovely bunch of human beings there.
Yeah, he's playing in my band on Friday.
Ah, is he pretending to be Rob Luft?
Yes, he is.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, that'll be mega. Be good. And then, yeah, we also have Rob Luft popping his head up for us on Monday. Oh, let's stick to chronology. Yeah.
All right, what's on Sunday?
Sunday, we've got Elliot Galvin's trio.
Oh, great.
Which would be really cool, with Tom McCready and Corey Dick.
Wow.
Consecutive
days of everyone who's ever had anything to do with my
album. I know. I think we essentially stole your band, dismantled it, and brought
spread
it back
them out.
In there.
Yeah. Everyone can have a gig.
Yeah.
I love it. Elliot's playing with his trio.
Yeah. And Emily,
that's Simon Roth and Tom McCready. Is that the one?
Tom McCready and Corey Dick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, it's,
And Emily caught them over at the Berghausen Jazz Wocker the other week, over with Beats and Pieces they were sharing a bill.
Oh, in Germany?
And said they were sounding amazing.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, really excited for that one. And then Monday we've got a whiskey tasting session.
Oh wow!
With Rob and Alice.
Right.
So
Rob Luft, Alice Sawadzki,
and loads of whiskey.
Who supplies the whiskey?
So, this is a question that we really wanted to have answered prior to this podcast.
Are you paying for this, or is someone else?
No, no, the whiskey jar's got loads of links, obviously, right. with fantastic different whiskey suppliers. So, we've put in a request for some beautiful single malt scotch.
Wow.
So, hopefully, if this coffee house does not collapse in our heads hopefully we'll be getting some nice like beautiful little Scottish Isles.
Well, man, that sounds like a hell of a night getting to do that.
So that's only the afternoon, so the night will be kicking after that. So that's going to be like an hour of whiskey tasting with a guided thing with some beautiful food and whatever, and then beautiful music for an hour with Alice and Rob, who came and did a gig for us earlier in the year, no, last year, and that was stunning. It was really gorgeous, so that'll be great. And then to finish up our stage, we have Malaysia on the Monday night.
What's that?
Mark Lockhart, Liam Noble,
lovely.
And Jasper Hoiby.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, really great. So yeah, it's a really exciting week. Cannot wait for it.
Yeah,
we just have all the stress and fear that if it doesn't all sell out, we'll have to sell our instruments and kidneys and homes.
Yes.
But other than that, it's hopefully just an enjoyable run.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
Yeah.
So what's coming up for you then when you're done with the jazz festival?
So coming up to round up things with the night, we've got lots of lovely gigs every Monday.
Yeah.
I know we've got Alex Hitchcock's Quintet coming up.
Oh, great.
And we've got
Alex is on my long list of nemesises.
Nemesises?
Yeah.
Oh, how come?
How come? Because he's amazing.
Another person taking all the gigs that you could potentially have.
Exactly. And even when we play football together, he always scores loads of goals. And I'm
He strikes me as that kind of guy.
Yeah, he's very competitive.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed. You've got Gareth the Crane coming.
Well, yeah, so that's with Miguel Garodi's Nonet.
Oh, lovely.
Who I listened to the podcast from last week. It was great.
Awesome.
He's had a pretty fascinating start to his life in three different continents.
I know, I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, amazing.
That was really fun. And then actually Gareth has been on the show, but his episode is out. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
But yeah, so that's going to be phenomenal. That
yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that.
So when people apply for gigs at the Whiskey Jar, is it NQ Jazz you call it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where do you get that? Why is it NQ Jazz?
Northern Quarter.
Oh, cool.
Because we'd ended up hopping three venues within, I suppose there was a year period where we'd had three different venues.
Yeah.
It felt like we should maybe have a name that goes beyond just the actual place, and it also opens up the possibility of putting on gigs at other venues still under our aegis.
Right, I love that. That's a wonderful idea.
So that's the plan, and we've got some links with other venues that we may well be putting some things on in future.
Right.
Not on Monday nights and things like that.
Cool.
We're really happy with everything at the Whiskey Jar, so we don't want to disturb that in any way. That's beautiful.
Are they pleased to become a cultural significance?
Yeah, definitely.
To be in the festival brochure and all.
Yeah, they've been really supportive of the whole thing. And in fact, they've just changed some management around, and the new manager I think he's studied acting, so he's already quite in the cultural world and arts, and is super pro everything we're doing. So big thanks to everyone at the Whiskey Jar.
Yeah, that makes a big... Well, it's essential.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Definitely.
So it makes a big difference to, just browsing the gigs here, seeing if anything. I like how this year, if you leave the mouse over the band, it kind of zooms
the face
in.
Face slowly comes towards you.
Yeah, I like the look of this Supertramp big band featuring John Helliwell.
Oh, John's such a beautiful guy.
Yes, they're on Friday the 24th. 7:30 p.m.
Marcus Miller's another one of the big name gigs for the festival.
Yeah, absolutely. If it's any persuasion, my mum will be at the Marcus Miller gig.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you seen that one of our old college chums, Sam Healy, was playing down on Marcus's tour in London?
Was
or
he?
Is about to, or is...
Wow.
At some point, either past or future...
Yes.
Is or was playing with Marcus Miller. So that's cool.
That's awesome. I must look into that. Didn't know about that. Jason Singh, I feel like I saw this guy play last year with Yaz Ahmed.
Cool, cool.
May have made that up.
He's got some really beautiful local Manchester-based musicians playing with him.
Right.
Who are all amazing. John Ellis and Alan Keary, Mikey Wilson.
Right.
And Aaron Gosch as well.
Yeah, this is that new venue you mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
9 o'clock on Friday night. Well, you're doing a really good job of this. This is some like actual previewing. Normally it's just me and Dan talking a complete load of shit. None of it makes any sense.
They've also got this whole series of celebrating Europe.
Right.
So I don't know too much about the individual bands because they're all from all across different necks of the wood in Europe. But yeah, it's a beautiful concept, I think.
Yeah, it is.
At
I
this
like
time
it.
Of all, and all that.
Of so, course. Because you know, there's always a really good vibe of like having lots of Northwest-based players as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes it feel unlike any other festival when it has a really strong, homegrown load of bands that maybe you wouldn't see at another jazz festival.
Sure.
So anyway, let's get back to you. So what else is coming? What else is coming up?
So,
do you want me to open your calendar?
So, there's the Manchester Jazz Collective is a deck
tet. Oh, yeah,
tet.
Great, yes. Let's talk about that.
So, that's a deck tet I set up about 4 years ago or so. Again, at the Wonder Inn, we had a monthly residency.
Right.
And we...
What made you set that up?
So, I had done a project a few months before with Johnny Hunter and Graham South running their own deck tet, and they just put together a one-off thing, and they'd got a load
Johnny Hunter's a drummer, isn't he?
Yeah.
Anton Hunter's brother.
Exactly, that's how he's mostly known, Anton Hunter's brother.
That's how I want him to, I thought just it would be only fair to him.
On the national scene,
he
is Anton Hunter's brother.
Okay, sweet. Sorry, Johnny, that wasn't deliberate.
And Graham's fantastic trumpet player.
Yes.
And they just wanted to write some large ensemble music.
Okay.
So just put together a one-off gig of their stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a fantastic project to be involved in. There was some killer musicians on that. I think like Ollie Dover was on it. I remember having a sort of slightly out-of-body experience standing between Ollie Dover doing a sort of like thrashy metal free improv screamo 10-minute blistering solo, standing between him and Johnny Hunter on drums going absolutely AWOL and just sort of feeling my heart spasming and you know,
great.
That was an intense thing. So I had a really good time with that, and I thought, well, there's not really many opportunities to play large ensemble original music around Manchester, so let's start a platform where we can just regularly bring down new music. So during the residency, every month a few people would bring down some new tunes. The lineup would change quite a lot. We had some guest artists. We had Abel Selouchoy coming and playing. He's doing a few gigs at the festival as well. He's a South African cellist. We had, we had Rachel Maybe, a singer based in London, an operatic improvising jazz singer.
Right.
Fantastic. Who else? Hugo Corbin, Parisian guitarist.
Right.
We had, you know, lots of great guest artists. And I think we got together a pad of about 8.5 hours worth of music.
Oh, wow.
Just by doing new things every month and revisiting old things. And, and that was beautiful. And then when the Wonder Inn shut, we lost our residency space. We're still on the lookout, so if anyone knows somewhere that would be really up for putting on a large ensemble playing silly new music every month, that would be really good. But we became Jazz North's Northern Line artists this year.
Right.
Are you familiar with that scheme?
I'm familiar in the sense that you'll actually get some money for making new music.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay,
so
how did you get into that then?
It's just an application process.
Cool. Yeah.
Forms and recordings.
You just write down, we have 8.5 hours of music.
Please give us money for gigs. There's 10 of us. No one can afford to book us.
Yeah, exactly. Great.
So it means we have a load of funding for gigs around the north.
Brilliant.
And your gigs must all be within set boundaries of what constitutes the north of England.
Wow, brilliant.
And that's really good fun. We've already had a few of those. We were playing in the Bridgewater Hall last week. That was great. Beautiful place to play, obviously, great acoustics.
Yeah.
And then we have gigs sort of smattered throughout the year at various festivals and clubs and all that.
Yeah.
And we are hoping, we sort of opened the door to this, but to maybe take it over to the Faroe Islands in January.
Oh, wow.
Which would be amazing.
Yeah.
And maybe do some sort of cross-cultural collaboration of new commissions and things.
Yeah.
But that's sort of long-term goal to that.
Yeah.
But that's a really fun project. Jeff Guntran's on that as well.
Awesome.
Who's playing in the commission this year with
Mancunity.
Yeah.
My wife's in that band as well. I'm just going to put it out there.
Just float it out there.
She'll thank me for that,
I'm sure. Yeah. So that's going to be fantastic.
Who else is in the collective?
Yes, so Emily, my partner, is in that on sax as well. And can also do all the tripling stuff now. So
it's now
up to us to write loads of stuff with bass clarinet.
Awesome.
That was never an option before.
Yeah, brilliant.
So that's really exciting. And it's myself and Jeff, and then trumpets, Nick Walters and Graham South.
Lovely.
Trombones, Ellie Whitley and Rich McVeigh.
Awesome.
And then Andy Stamatakis Brown on piano, Paul Baxter on bass, and Anton Hunter's brother on drums.
Yes, of course. Yes. Yeah, awesome. I met Paul Baxter, the bassist.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was brutal. we met on a gig last year. And then, I don't remember very much about it now. Until, for me now, normally when I mention that I host the jazz podcast, that's the only thing that puts me on the map, you know? Who the hell are you? I don't recognise anything about your face.
The jazz podcast.
Exactly, yeah. That's it. That's the dream.
Brilliant.
I did the coaching Niger London once last year.
Oh, nice.
At the very start of the rehearsal, one of the students said, "Sir, your voice sounds really familiar." I shat myself, and I was just like, "Kids, I can go home now." I was like, "My life's work is done. I'm gonna hang up my reeds." It was
Brilliant.
The greatest single moment of my entire life.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, you know. That was something. Doesn't get better than that.
Yeah.
Not for me, anyway. It'll never be like someone listens to the album and recognises my sax playing.
Yeah.
But this pure golden voice. Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, for some reason it came back into my head there. It sort of ties together a few things we've been chatting about. I was doing a gig. I was booked for a gig a few years back with Paul Baxter and Dave Smythe.
Right. We were both on the degree, masters, whatever. Dave was the year beneath me.
Cool.
But we did play together quite a lot.
He did his undergrad at York Uni. And he was really proactive on the York scene, getting loads of gigs together. So
yeah.
And I used to play in a couple of his projects.
Right.
So he'd booked me for a trio gig. And then somehow some funding popped up from somewhere and he gave me a call and very politely said, "I've got all this funding. I'd really like to do a gig with Ian Ballamy.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I, you know, if we swap you out and, you know..."
Swap you out.
Yeah. I can't remember how we worded it.
Now I've got some money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But in fairness, if you had the choice of booking 20-year-old Kyron Matthews or Ian Ballamy... That there is definitely only one sensible.
Yeah.
To be honest, Kyron Matthews of any age, but particularly 20-year-old. And it was with plenty of advance warning. Dave wasn't being out of order or anything.
Yeah.
But as I'd had the night free in my diary, I thought, well, I'll go and watch, you know.
Yeah.
So I went towards the gig, and you know what I was like as a late teen, early 20s type.
You were very ambitious.
I'm very forthright in my
I enjoyed
social
that.
Interactions.
Do you know what? When we first met, I didn't quite know how to make of it, but now I love it. I love the frankness, you know. When I look back really fondly on how we used to interact.
I like that invites the door to the fact that at the time it might have been quite a different experience.
Yeah, no, I think you just asked me very difficult questions that I didn't know the answer to myself. I remember one of the first times, I think you were in first year and maybe I was in third year or fourth year, I forget now. You turned around in the RNTM Opera Theatre and were like, Rob, you like jazz, right? You know, what are you doing with your life? You're going to go and study somewhere. Go and get a jazz degree. Sort your life. You know, I was like, interesting, yes. But of course you were right, you know.
I'd like to now retrospectively take the credit for you going to academy.
Yeah,
then.
Exactly. Just, of course.
But anyway, just before the gig started, Ian Ballamy was having a little wander through.
Yeah.
And I went up to Ian and... being the person who was at the time, I just went up to him and I went, "You've nicked my gig." Then obviously expecting, after a shocked pause, to carry on and have a chat.
Hey, and, a hug and all.
And literally at that moment, Dave came over and went, "We're on stage, Ian," and they just walked off. And then I had to leave before the end of the gig to catch my train.
Oh, brilliant.
So I never got a chance to explain myself to Ian. Yeah. And then a couple of years ago, or maybe 5 years ago or something, he was playing in Manchester.
Yeah.
And I went again to see him, and I went up and I said, "Hi, I'm not sure if you remember me." And I think before I finished my sentence, "Yes, I remember you."
Oh, no. Oh, that's horrible.
Sinking moment. Yeah. He was absolutely fine about it.
Oh, brilliant.
And then, and obviously now he'll be one of my teachers in September, so I now need to drag myself out of his bad books.
Oh, that's amazing. What a great story.
But it was such beautiful timing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Ballamy will be on stage.
Yeah.
Who let you back here?
Yeah, so things are in a funny flux at the moment, obviously, with career, because with going down to study in September...
It's really exciting.
It's really exciting, but it's also a funny time to be trying to plan things with projects in Manchester.
Of course, yeah.
So it sort of feels like some things are...
I mean, you'll probably end
having
up...
having a pause.
You know, yeah, of course. Because I would have thought you'd be very quickly, like, suddenly into loads of stuff in London and playing loads and...
I mean, obviously, you know, that would be brilliant. And obviously that's the idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
Immerse myself in the scene and all that.
Do you ever think about what you'll do when you finish those 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously nothing set in stone and all things open. I do love Manchester, and I think there's a big growing scene up here.
Yeah.
And I think there is, actually, having said this with you, sitting next to me, having been in Manchester and then going to London, and, you know, there's a lot of great talent across the nation that gets sucked into London, which makes London an amazing scene and, you know, a massive melting pot of great stuff, but it also possibly detracts from the ability for other scenes to flourish in the same way around the country.
Yeah.
So I don't know yet is the answer.
Okay.
I definitely don't want to stop doing lots of gigging around Manchester because I've got lots of musical friends and, you know,
I mean, I haven't lived here for 8 years now. If it's not any help, I know, but like I'm still surprised at how often I get to come back and play or stuff comes up, you know. Like being here right now, you know, even though I left 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know, I feel like once you've lived somewhere for a while, people will always wanna hang out or play or, you know.
So I mean the ideal for me would be to have a healthy foot in both. And wherever that means life takes you in the future, who knows.
Do you ever listen to the Andy Robb podcast?
I haven't.
Bassist. He lived in London for a while. Then he went to study in Norway, but he didn't tell anyone. So he didn't want to lose all his gigs in London. Yeah. He was like commuting like every couple of days. But you know, if people just assume you're around, then they'll be always up for
it. That's it. I'd like to keep a healthy balance, because I've already done that. You know, I lived in South Africa for a year when I left college, and so I know that thing of returning back and just having a completely empty diary,
and
the fear and the inability to have life functioning without any work, you know.
Yeah.
So I definitely don't want to fall into any traps like that.
But, what did you do? What made you go to South Africa? Did you have a family there?
No. I wanted feedback on my CV at the end of college.
Yeah.
And a job popped up at this amazing school in Pretoria. We should make it clear, we both did classical undergraduates.
Contemporary classical saxophone, which quite often in London, people say that they didn't know...
Like existed.
Exactly.
As a concept.
Because they didn't know it was like, for a couple of years, I actually had a really great career. Because people didn't... Nobody knew the contemporary classical saxophone existed in the jazz world that yeah. I was entering. So everyone assumed that I'd been principal study clarinet.
Oh, wow.
Loads of clarinet gigs.
Oh, funny.
I know, and of course I wasn't, but I thought they knew I wasn't.
Yeah.
I just took the gigs quite gladly. Had to practice really hard to be able to do anything.
So
but then, like, the rumours spread, the mystery grew, and I was getting loads of work as a clarinetist.
Wow.
And unfortunately, one day I went for a play with Laura Judd, and I took my saxophone, and when I got there, it's just the two of us. She looked really disappointed. She's like, where's your clarinet? And only then did I realise that they thought I was a clarinetist and that I'd blown my cover.
Yeah,
it was horrible.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But I think there was... I suppose we're in a bit of a different position, because you knew, I think, obviously... Obviously, you knew because you'd already lined up academy the following year. You'd made a decision at some point through your undergrad that you were going to change tact in your career.
You know, it was in my third year when we spent 3 days with Chris Potter.
Oh,
they were just so profound, those 3 days.
Yeah.
It was you're right, I had those leanings already, but that was like nails in the coffin. It was absolutely over.
Yeah, because that was moment, my first term at college.
Wow, yeah. Yeah.
And I remember being up in the JCR having a jam session.
Chris played, didn't he?
Yeah, he played piano.
Yeah, he played Stella.
I just remember playing Night in Tunisia.
Tom Taylor went, oh no, he's better at the piano than me. And I was like, you think?
I just remember being 18 and being on stage when he walked in the room and I just left.
In the middle of a tune, just like, uh-oh, better get out of here.
And I was still thinking classical saxophone was what I was doing, and it's what I'd obviously trained to do and all this stuff. This job was for a classical saxophone tutor at the South African equivalent of Eton.
This is before college?
This is at the end of college.
Oh, right, cool, okay.
So I sent my CV off just for some feedback on it, thinking I'll now apply for some work around the UK.
Oh, and they...
But this was a nice way to just test the waters.
Of course.
And
somewhere really far away.
Exactly. Well, that was it. If I have anything incriminating on here, it's not going to cause any problems. So, and then they offered me, and this was it. They said,
Kyron, I'm afraid you're on the sex offenders list. You know, oh dear.
It's fine. It's only in South Africa.
Yeah.
I. They'd requested you have a master's degree already.
Right, okay.
So I thought, there's no way they'd give it to me, they'll just tell me some things. And then they actually offered me the job after interviewing.
Wow.
And I had no intention of taking it, but one of my best mates at college is Abel Salace's African cellist, who we've spoken about, mentioned a couple of times. And he said, no, man, you must go and do this.
Yeah.
You know, when else are you going to go and live in South Africa?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, yeah, true. So I thought, what else am I going to do? I'm just out of college. Now is the time if you're ever going to move somewhere. So I just went to South Africa for a year.
Oh, and brilliant.
Had an absolute blast. I had to wear an academic robe to teach swooped around the place.
That's wonderful.
Great fun.
Must have felt incredible.
Oh, yeah. So it's a massive ego trip.
Right. I might start buying some academic robes
on the
primary
tube.
Schools. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Nothing that won't attract any attention. It's my commuting robe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh yeah, it's an amazing experience.
Was it always going to be 1 year, or did you just want to do a year?
It
and
was.
Come back?
It was basically someone over there was, well, the previous teacher was going and doing a master's elsewhere.
Cool. Right.
So they were just advertising a fixed
term.
So it was perfect.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I would recommend to anyone looking at taking some time out, living somewhere else at a young age, that it's a really great thing to do for perspective on the world.
Yeah.
And especially somewhere like South Africa where, you know, the juxtapositions in society are really laid clear, you know.
Yes.
That was amazing. It was a fantastic experience. Amazing people, amazing country, beautiful. Amazing music, amazing food, all that. So yeah, it was wicked. The coming months, I'm back over to the Faroe Islands again next month, which would be great. Doing a big band project over there.
Amazing.
I can't think what else is going on in my life, but lots of nice things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Some gigs with Josh Briley's Nonet.
Right.
Josh did that project with Chris Potter up here.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
And Chris came and hung out at the Wonder Inn yeah. on some of our Monday night gigs.
Yeah.
Just came to watch. Nadim was playing, Nadim Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, I remember it was with Sam Dunn's quartet,
yeah.
Tjuluka, however yeah. they're pronouncing it. I just remember the way the door opened into the venue space. Chris walked in and Nadim was absolutely blowing yeah. his face yeah. off and sounding yeah. incredible. And you could just see a big smile on Chris's
yeah,
face, which was beautiful.
Yeah.
And I just remember Sam Dunn being side on, watching Chris come in and just yeah. crumpling.
Like a deflating,
yeah.
you know. Someone needs to blow that guy back up again.
But yeah, that was cool. Yeah, Josh is an amazing bass player and I have a lot of fun playing in his non-air.
Yeah.
So it's good to be getting back doing some gigs with that again.
Yeah.
Misha Gray has smatterings of gigs. Do you know Misha?
No.
He's a sort of loss to the music scene because he's a full-time medical doctor.
Oh, wow.
But he's doing sort of much more important things, I suppose, yeah. than yeah. the rest of us.
Yeah.
But he's a phenomenal pianist.
Oh, wow.
You know, he could go and have an international career, yeah. but he just knobs about a bit and
cool.
saves lives the rest of the
yeah.
time. He's playing at the Manchester Jazz Festival with a group called Heavy Lemo,
right?
Which is, I think they're advertising themselves as like a 70s funk band with sort of hip-hop overtones, which
yeah.
is really funny for me because I know Misha is like McCoy Tyner
yeah.
reborn into yeah. a sort of middle-class white man.
Yeah. reborn.
Yeah. Reincarnated. Brilliant. As Misha Gray.
Yeah.
He's really into that sort of like Lake Coltrane vibe.
Right.
So I'm quite looking forward to hearing him doing some hip-hop and seeing
yeah.
how those things match
yeah.
up. But yeah, it's going to be good. But yeah, thankfully the funding road is now over for Masters.
Great.
So
that's
we need
wonderful.
To just see how the land lies when I get there.
Wonderful. Well, Kyron, I'll see you next week at the
yes.
Manchester Jazz Festival.
See you there, Rob.
Sick. Thanks for coming on the Jazz.
It's been
podcast.
A pleasure.
Yeah.
Well done.
Mm.
I enjoyed that a lot.
101.
Yeah, I know. Big time. Next week will be Rory Ingham and his band previewing
Great.
Their brand new album.
Have you got Malcolm Edmonston coming on yet?
Oh, crumbs. I better get on with that.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, there was a lot of fan support for that when it went public because
yeah.
I had to publicly tweet him to get it going. Yeah, the people were clamouring for that bad boy. So
yeah. When are we doing your one as well?
Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying having it.
Or Claire? Still. You're doing Claire one
yeah,
day.
We will. That'd be a fun show.
You were going to tell me something else as well. What was it?
Scintillating end.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I'm just watching the old Wimbledon reopening court number one with the roof.
Well, that starts soon, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm
Shall
so
I?
Excited. McEnroe's playing right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've been playing much Overcooked.
Mm. Yeah, I've been loving it. Got a second control coming so that...
Oh, just so you can play.
If you've got any ability to play games, want to play games in life, there's this little Overcooked. It's so good.
Dan, a little bitty of a PlayStation game, really, isn't it?
I think it's on Nintendo Switch as well. It should be on iPhone. The controls are so simple. That'd be a
yeah,
great way of...
Yeah.
That should be our next public campaign.
Yeah, I agree.
Overcooked ported to iPhone.
Yeah.
So,
right.
That's the plan. Yeah, sick. Let's get out of here.
Well, let's do it, yeah. Let me know how you go on with the parking ticket.
Thank you very much, lads. And probably I'll have had that Manchester Jazz Festival gig next time I talk to
yeah.
you. So we can have probably a 1 hour recap of how it
yeah.
went.
Very good.
All right. Delightful.
Ciao, man.
Take it easy. Speak
Bye.
To you soon.